Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. I'm David Ponder.
And I'm Zach Schaefer.
We created a candid podcast for busy people. We get right to the point of our topics, and we keep them to 30 minutes or less.
We wanted to put our ideas out there, share it with people we love, and if it spreads, great.
Our show has no edits and no gimmicks.
Like it or don't, we initially started this project for ourselves, to record our thoughts for our kids, but our friends and family thought we should share it, so here you go.
Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. Today we're talking about one of my favorite subjects. If you eat dinner, I'm likely to bring up something related to this because it, you know, it makes me think about the future. And I'm an optimist, and I like to think it's going to help us out in the future. And we're talking about technology.
Now, is this just anyone, if they eat dinner, they'll think of this? Or if they dinner with you? If you eat dinner, this topic will come into your brain.
I didn't say with me.
No, that's funnier though. Eat dinner and you will think of technology.
Well, you should. You should, because
that's right.
Because we're going to talk about the history of technology.
That's right. And food.
And cooking.
Food preparation. Agricultural practices.
Things that you don't even think about. Things that you take for granted.
Hungry man dinners.
They're technology.
What am I holding in my hand?
Looks like a dog muzzle?
Nope.
What is it?
What's it called?
Yak tracks.
Yak tracks. You have a guess with what this contraption is. It's a rubber Velcro metal device.
It almost looks like some sort of looks like a dog muzzle or a strange sex toy.
Yeah. No, that's pretty good. So here is what you do with it. You take it and you go, you strap it onto your foot. Like that.
Okay. Everyone,
for the winter, I put it on the bottom of my shoe. So the rubber sort of, it's like think of it like a Venus flytrap. And then you just kind of.
So there's a part that stretches over your toe and a part that stretches over your heel. And it's metal and rubber. And the metal is wrapped in a coil around the rubber. Mm-hmm. And there's different, you know, lengths of rubber that crisscross throughout the bottom of it. And you stretch it over your toe and your heel. And then the metal, you know, which is stretching around the rubber, obviously acts as a sort of like a cleat system.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it is instead of putting on metal spikes, if you live in snowy, icy climates, treacherous weather, you can strap these onto your regular shoes. Brilliant tool.
It's nice. Like studded tires for your feet.
Exactly. It's like chains on your tires in Colorado.
Yep.
So why do I bring this up? Well, my mother-in-law, Marilyn, she gives out all kinds of cool little goofy gifts, and I got these last year, and I wish we have some wintry, snowy winters coming up so I can use them. But why I wanted to start here is this technology? Yeah, of course it is. It's simple. It solves a unique problem. It's great. But do I need this? No, I don't. What purpose does this serve? It's kind of fun. It's a conversation starter. I can put it on. Maybe if I'm running out with the kids, pushing them, sledding, right? It's a luxury to a degree, a conversation starter. This, to an Inuit family, is life or death.
Yeah.
He puts these on the man. I'm assuming the men are the ones going like walrus hunting.
Sure.
But they put this on and they feed their family for an entire year or winter. Like, so I wanted to start with technology for me. It's interesting. We can define it in all kinds of different ways. I think of it as applied science that solves a particular problem. But a theme you're going to hear from me today is it helping? Is it solving something particular that we need, or is it more of a desire driven? And that's when I think about technology, that's the first thing I always go to. So
that's it, you know, and we always start off with the definition. Did you come up with that off the top of your head? Because it's almost exactly.
No, yeah, I didn't. I never look up like the exact
Google definition.
Yeah,
no. I mean, I wish, you know, the words that you said were almost exactly this. The application of scientific knowledge for practical purposes, especially in industry. I don't like the especially in industry. I think it's just the application of, I wouldn't even say scientific knowledge. I'd just say knowledge for practical purposes. I also think it has, in the past, it has contained an element of externality to the human body. So tools, right? So we started using extensions of ourselves to do things.
A shovel.
Yeah. So like if you look at the history of technology, you know, you can anybody look it up. The first thing they start talking about is the use of tools. And there's evidence that humans or human-like creatures started using tools 2.5 million years ago. And I think they've even seen either chimpanzees or gorillas start to use tools.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
ravens use tools as well, the bird.
So, I mean, the use of tools, I mean, that is a technology. And so, but it's interesting because, and we'll get to this later, because as we'll get to, like, more recent technologies.
Yeah, I like that we're kind of going to do it a little bit chronologically.
Yeah.
That's smart.
But I think that the whole externality thing will disappear.
You mentioned something. This is neither here nor there, but I want to push back. So when I said scientific knowledge, I didn't mean that the Inuit man is sitting down doing a formal experiment, but there is all the sciences. I go back to fifth grade. What's the scientific method? Have a problem, ask a question, design something that you think can help potentially solve that problem, test it out,
yeah,
share your results with your family or the other hunters. Like, what do you think? Give me some feedback. Okay, let's tweak it, go test it again. Like, that's science. They didn't know what they were doing. They weren't being necessarily rigorous with it, but they were using a method.
I think that you're right, but today that word is loaded.
Fair enough. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. But
if you're just staying strictly to the scientific method, which is come up with a hypothesis, right?
Or a question.
Or a question, and then do experiments to answer it, and find, you know, based on their results. Well, sort of the principle of Life Lab, right?
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
So, yes, just wanted to throw that out there. We all use, real quick, there's a difference between scientific theory and folk theory. In the end, we are still using theory, trying to describe and explain phenomenon, things going on in our world that we don't understand. But most of us come up with folk theories, just anecdotes, ideas to try to explain things. But we don't necessarily go test them out, share those results, and then try to prove whether we're right or wrong. We just go with the flow until we find a better way. Scientific theory, though, is all about sharing that and forcing critique. And to me, technology comes into both of those things, right? So in our daily lives, we try to fill gaps with different tools or technologies. People in industry, as Google said, or academia or scientists in general, they do the same thing, but just with more rigor and precision.
You said four words in that description that I think can hit the nail on the head. Finding a better way.
Mm-hmm. Finding a better way. I like that.
So, yeah. All right. So
what do you got, man? Dive in.
Yeah. So let's talk. We said chronological. So the history of technology, now that we've laid out what it is, it kind of boggles your mind to think about all the things that we take for granted that help our lives that are technology, you know? And today you talk to people about technology, they instantly want to go to electronics and computers. And
love it. So every semester in one of my classes, when we get to talking about the relationship between humans and technology in the workplace, I do an experiment at the beginning of class and I say, you've got 30 seconds to look around and write down as many pieces of technology as you see in this classroom. 99% of the time, they only write down phone, calculator, the projector, the computer, only electronic
stuff.
That's ridiculous. No one has ever written down the blackboard, chalk, a pencil, clothing.
Yeah,
shoes.
Yeah. We'll hit on. So let's talk about these tools. 2.5 million years ago, talked about that fire. There's evidence that we, quote unquote, tamed fire 500,000 years ago. Bricks, 8,000 BC. Bricks, right? Like, man, that's a technology.
Yeah.
Spindles. So the simplest starting to twist thread together, and tools to do that was 8,000 BC. So like pottery and smelting, think about that, like melting down metals to create tools. To me, I would have thought that was like pretty fairly advanced. That was 6,500 BC. The wheel, 3,000 BC. Cement seems to me like cement, mixing cement together. I don't know. That was 200 BC. I mean, so much stuff came out of Rome, including that cement, arches, the aqueducts, running water.
So lots of engineering, construction, and manufacturing products are tied to those materials.
Printing, right, was in the 1400s AD. Printing. That changed the world. People don't think about it. Printing changed the world. Clocks. 1400 AD, like modern clocks.
I have something that's not going to be in your list that just jumped into my head that I'm going to go literally write about on a blog after this show. I think this is maybe the most important tool of all tools that have helped us get to where we are today. And this tool has shifted form over time. And now I think we're not using it as strategically as we could. Stories.
Stories.
So not just language and communication, going from drawing on a cave wall to talking, but creating the structure of a story to share our identities, our traditions, our rituals, our values, our meaning, our purpose, our impact over generations. The ability to create an identity for this tribe over here through stories, why we need to kill them, and yet these people over here are our friends.
We could do a whole show, I think, on stories.
We should. We need
stories
to. That's a good
started
idea.
Religion.
Yes.
Think about it.
We're going to do that. Okay.
We can. Stories started everything.
That's awesome.
We have evolved on, based on stories. I mean.
So we'll talk in that one. We'll also talk about why it's a tool, because I've never heard it labeled that way, but it
right,
is.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, printing changed the world. You know, you could send a message, you know, and record knowledge like never before. Clocks, drugs. Think about drugs, right? Penicillin. Penicillin wasn't invented until 1928. That's insane, man. People were just dying from common infections until 1928. And think about, I mean, you know, that leads me to this. If penicillin wasn't created until 1928, think about what the world was like in 1928 versus what it's like today. And we're talking about fire was 500,000 years ago. Bricks were 8,000 BCE spindle. So to go from the bricks to, you know, penicillin is in the span of 10,000 years. Think about what we've done in the last 100, not even 100 years since then.
Yeah.
It's going up exponentially.
I agree, but we still use bricks.
No, that's absolutely.
That's interesting.
I'm not saying that
bricks are just, they've stood the test of time.
No, and I think I'm making the point that we stand on the shoulders of those before
us. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Every technology that we have today is based on a technology that someone created before. Without electricity, you know, none of the electronic goods that we're talking about would even be a thought in anyone's mind.
Without the people that created mathematical systems and allowed the teaching and proliferation of that system to others, or literacy. So you're talking about printing, and in the back of my mind, literacy has to go along
literacy.
With printing. The idea
absolutely.
Of teaching
yeah.
people how to read and inter- oh, I just got this letter. What's it say? I don't fucking know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can't
a
read.
A lot of the world is like, got it. What do you think? I have some highfalutin
and
reader?
And who controlled that then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, power structures always try to control technology. So we'll get into that too. We'll get into that. But, I just think it's awesome, or I think it's amazing. If you really stop and think about how fast technology is advancing today, you know, that period of time where the steam engine was invented, you know, penicillin, all these, the industrial revolution leading into, you know, modern drugs and things like that to like now, nowadays, the things that we're talking about, the things that are on the horizon right now are game changers, right? We're talking about changing your genes, right? There's something out there called CRISPR right now that you can change your genes. And nobody knows how to handle this. We'll get into the technology yep. of change. But it's crazy how when you talk about these old technologies, everyone's like, oh, yeah, penicillin, of course.
It's so taken for granted.
They're taken, yeah, but they're also like, they're unquestioned. But if you talk about a new technology, people challenge it. People are, it's, so, you know, we were talking about, I think we touched on this resistance to change.
No, I was going to say, let's talk a little bit how I naturally talk about some of the futuristic ideas
right.
versus how you do more optimistically. And I think this ties into what your line of thought is. I'm not sure.
It does. It's like there's a natural psychology with humans to be resistant to change, period. And it is heightened when you're talking about that with new technologies. And it's amazing how you just get a year or two where that technology becomes part of a daily usage, you know, and just accepted in society. And all those questions are out the window. I would love to go back to the time when penicillin was starting to be used and people are like, what? They're putting a fungus inside themselves and that they think that's going to magically cure them. Like, that's crazy. What? It's going to kill people. Like, I'm not doing it. I'll never put that fungus inside me.
Right.
Yeah, you're not going to tell me that I'm going to be
putting
that
fungus inside
me. When
there were plenty of people that chose that.
Yeah, and then they see the people who are experimenting and putting it in them living, and then they're like, oh, maybe that's
or they double down on their principles.
Maybe that's not such a bad idea. Yeah, but how many of them do you think were dead or like we're sick and dying?
But
and
that's
like,
my so not that, putting that in. So me. That goes back to my point. What do you remember the question your brother asked you about me regarding technology?
No.
He said, "Why is Zach, when we talk about these things on Facebook, he'll go so negative on some of these things emerging?" And do you remember what my answer was to you?
No, I want to hear. No, this is important.
Because to me, it boils down to control and identity, right? So I love technology. I'm all for the things that are going to emerge. But I also know humans, and I'm naturally fairly skeptical. My PhD training, of course, accelerated that 100-fold. And I'm a prag. Dave's called himself an optimist. I'd call myself a pragmatic optimist. So while I hope for the best, I also understand the systems and structures that we have going on and how things are going to be manipulated to those structures to keep them intact. So for me, here are the things that I think about. Why do people with the penicillin or augmented reality today or automation, why do they get upset? Because they feel they're going to lose their sense of meaning, purpose, and impact in this world. Those are the three things that make us human. That is why people push back so hard. That is why people will die and not take penicillin, because if they feel like they have got their principle, their purpose, their identity, they'll go down with that. And do I think that's smart? Yeah. No.
Like
they're dying.
Yeah.
But do I think they should have the right to do it? You're goddamn right, I do.
I'll agree with you. They
should control their own lives. And if that means suicide by not taking an antibiotic, let them have the right to do that.
I'll go ahead.
That's all I mean.
I'll agree with you on that. Yeah. People should have the right to not use technology. I think that that's absolutely a given. I'm all for my personal freedom. That being said, it looks, you know, after the fact, looking back on it, we get this quote unquote sense of clarity, this 2020 vision of, wow, you know, we would all say that's a ridiculous decision.
On the wrong side of penicillin history.
Yeah, like that's so dumb. You should have just taken the penicillin and lived and been there for your kids and blah, blah, blah. But those people may have literally, their identity could have been so wrapped in probably a religious belief that, well, what God wants for me is going to happen. I am not going to alter the course of history with, you know, some fungus. And plus, it's probably dangerous to me. Who knows what the side effects are going to be? You know, I'm not going to do it. I'd rather let God decide my fate.
Yeah, they have a different story, a different tool, a narrative they're applying to make sense of it. To me, it boils down to purpose. People fear technology change because if they have crafted, they've incrementally tried to create this narrative that they share. You know, they meet somebody new. Oh, what do? XYZ plus ABC equals Zach Schaefer. And then if some new letter gets created out of the middle of nowhere that disrupts that, people don't know what to do. They have a paradigm shift, and it's scary.
You know what? Maybe that is what divorces me from this. I mean, it's not like I don't have some sort of fear of change, but I more have a curiosity of change. I'd rather see what happens and experience it and be there. It excites me to be part of that changing world and to understand my place in it. I think that might be a difference between me and most people that I talk to. Most people that I talk to about futuristic technologies, be it self-driving cars or cryptocurrencies or CRISPR, changing of your genes.
3D printing, neuroscience, big predictive data.
Yes, integrating technology into your body, augmenting your physical being with technology. Everyone has negative. The first thing out of 90% of people's mouths is they imagine some negative thing that's going to happen as a result of it, which, let's talk about side effects of technology. There absolutely have been negative things. And I think some of the most amazing side effects of technology are ones that we're just coming to grips with. Like we could talk about what a cell phone does to your life, a quote unquote smartphone.
So right here
has crazy negative effects.
So I just,
you don't even think
a about. Simple line on our whiteboard here on one, just a simple line here, folks. On one end, it says enabling. On the other end, it says constraining.
I love
so
that.
Dave, when you think about technology, tell me where to draw the X on this line.
I would put it closer to enabling than constraining.
Here?
I think you're pretty close.
So he's about, whatever, let's say it's 12 inches. He's about an inch from enabling. I would say I'm more...
Zach's
right in the middle.
In the middle.
So I get I'm not scared of change. You know that. But at the end of the day, I do understand power and money and politics and how are these devices and ideas going to be used in ways that we're going to be told are beneficial to us, but in other ways they aren't. And maybe not even consciously or strategically, like they're trying to manipulate us or control us. Cell phones. So useful. We have it's not a phone, people. We should call them cell computers.
They're computers. Pocket computers.
Pocket computers. Right? It's so enabling. We get it. And it is so constraining. I was just thinking about, and I'm an addict on the phone because I get all my different business and emails going there. And then with social media and the pings and the notifications, we are all Pavlov's dogs salivating. We create different dings and different vibrations that can tell us what the message is before we even read it. It's so constraining because then the people in front of you were totally disconnected from.
I can tell you one constraint that I love to talk about when we get on this subject, and that is takes me back to the Seinfeld days. And you can watch Seinfeld and you can relate to everything in Seinfeld, but there will be certain things that are just a little bit off. They'll call each other on these phones that are tethered to a coffee table, right? And they if they're not there, they're like, oh, they must be out. They must be out and about. People had the freedom to just be out and about and not at everyone's beck and call for a response within, you know, minutes. That's a constraint that we have today.
Well, and Larry,
you have a responsibility to respond if you are pink.
People assume that you're mad at them or something's wrong.
Something's wrong, you're hurt, you're mad.
Like Larry David, I will never check in anywhere. Why? Because I'm stealing his idea. Why do I want everyone to know where I'm at all times, right? The government, of course, already does at a high level if they wanted to. Why does everyone in my life need to know I'm at Ted Drew's right now? Funny. What the fuck does that matter?
We had to create a new technology to offset this constraint. We had to create autoresponders.
Exactly.
Right? Like, I'm not dead. Everything's okay. Just give me a few hours to chill out.
Let's go more micro than that. Checking up. I'm in my bathroom at home right now, folks. So just give me 15 minutes. I'll be out. Okay, he's back in his living room. We can contact him now.
Especially when you're working. You know, you have to be on these chat programs that are instant response. You have to answer emails in a certain amount of time. You get text messages throughout the day. Like, people are hitting you up multiple ways. And it's sort of like, you know, there's a leeway to it, but you get judged by your response time, too, in business. It's crazy.
Right.
It's crazy.
Another higher level thing the way that I think of technology, I like to simplify it to tools, because to me, that's all these things are. They're
before
tools.
We move back, can I say
yeah,
one
yeah,
more
go
thing?
Ahead. Jump in.
But hold that. But I just want to say one more thing on this. You drew that the constraint versus enable, mm-hmm. and you put yourself right in the middle.
Yeah.
That means you can, when you think about technology as a whole, throughout history, we're talking about tools, bricks, cement, you can think of as many constraints that have come about of that based on that technology as benefits.
I mean, I don't want to say that I could.
Because that's what that means.
No, that
to
means.
Me.
To you, that's what that means.
Well, you
that's
put it
great.
Right in the middle.
Yeah, because I can think of as many constraints for our house. We just had a whole episode on caving and upcaving. There's so many constraints for having a nice house as there are not having an enormous house. To
okay.
me, it's very constraining.
Well, you're talking about self.
No, your view of
right.
what I'm talking about is that.
Yeah.
My view
yeah.
is what it is.
Okay. My view is you're talking about self-applied constraints, right?
So my point is why I put myself in the middle. This phone, it enables me to do a lot and have some answers and stay connected. It completely disconnects me from my family. My four-year-old will literally look at me and go, Dad, put the phone down. You promised you wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm. That's undebatable. That you can't debate that.
Right.
That's true.
So at the end of the day, if that phone falls in the Mississippi River, does it change my sense of meaning, purpose, and impact? No, it doesn't. It'd probably improve it. For a degree, it'd be full of tension and, oh, how am I getting my messages out? But will my life go on? Yes.
What I think you're missing is the situational usage of technology.
Context, the yak tracks.
So, yeah, exactly, the yak tracks. It's like the phone, when you're sitting around with your family, it is not an appropriate time to be using the phone technology. When you need to reach someone who is distant, that is an appropriate time to use that phone technology. You need to answer a question that you have to facilitate a conversation. That's an appropriate time to use that technology. You can think of all these situational usages. What becomes a problem is when you're using technology in the wrong instance, then I believe it becomes a problem.
Right, and that I agree with you 100%. And using technology in the wrong instance, if you have five people in the room, you're going to get five different answers for what the appropriate or inappropriate instance is. Mm-hmm. Your number one point you gave and your number three are directly tied together. You don't want to use technology when you're sitting together with your family. Then you said something number two. Then you said it could be used to start a conversation. You can use the technology. We do it all the time. Oh, what was that actor's name? You get it out. Oh, yeah. Oh, they were also in this.
I like that.
So yeah, I know, but you were using it in the opposite sense. You were saying it was inappropriate at times to have it. My point is, it's everyone's own story, interpretation, view. So it's enabling always and simultaneously constraining.
Yep.
But okay, to get to your answer, I can't just go list. I'm not claiming I can list 100 right. benefits and 100 deterrents.
But I'm just saying, when you like just start to think about technology.
I naturally usually, it depends on the technology. If it's medically related, I'm going to trust these professionals and hope that they're, because I don't know what they're doing or talking about. I'm going to trust that. But other things definitely related to consumerism, electronics, stuff like that, the marketing machine has done its – it is the
marketing
one of the
is
greatest
–
all it is a blur machine, and it blurs the difference between needs and desires, and that's it does so – and what did we just have yesterday? Marketing's greatest holiday.
Yeah, you're
Black
right.
Friday.
Black Friday. This is a perfect time to do this. Yeah, so many people out there, quote-unquote, buying technology right now.
Right.
So anyway,
yeah, good stuff.
What I would like to go back and touch on people's natural instant negative reaction to technology, because I do bring this up. It's one of my favorite topics of conversation because, like I said, I like to think about the cool ways or the positive impacts that new technology is going to have on our life and the things it's going to enable. And I instantly go to those and my God, the backlash I get. But here's the thing. With all the things that I said, right, everyone's like, oh, we'll never use cryptocurrencies widely, right? Okay. I think you're on the wrong side of history. You will be on the wrong side of history there. We'll never have self-driving cars. They're never going to develop to that. I mean, they're already in place, and there are companies using them in cities like Phoenix, Pittsburgh. And yeah, you're going to be on the wrong side of history. And we can just go down the line of all the things and the negative reactions that I get from people. I guess what I'm saying is technology is like a steamroller. It's like an unstoppable force. To borrow a funny thing from Meet the Parents, when they're at dinner and he's like giving almost like a mini eulogy to his mother who's in the urn. It's like,
oh yeah,
it was like an unstoppable rebel force. He's talking about cancer. That's what technology is, an unstoppable force. It is going to come, right? Because people are on some weird purpose driven, like it's innate within us to create, to innovate, to design, to find a better way. So it's coming, right? So you better... If you're going to be negative about it, then you're going to have a rough life, man.
True.
You were born in the wrong time.
No, I agree, but you hit it. We are a purpose-driven species. And so if people feel that a new technology is taking away their sense of purpose, that's why they're going to push back against it. And we might say, find a better purpose, find a different purpose, find a higher purpose, get more education, go learn something new. Well, yeah, we're pretty open-minded guys. Like to somebody from a previous generation, they've got their life, and then something comes along that takes away maybe their occupation, but more important, their purpose, and we're a purpose-driven species. That's fucking scary.
That's
for them.
It is. You know, maybe one of the things that has helped me with my mindset has been the field that I decided to go into. So in college, you know, I went MIS and started learning about, computer-related and business-related technologies. And it was kind of driven into our heads at that time that this is what's popular and hot right now, but you're never going to be able to stop learning. Like when you graduate, that'll be your ticket, you know, to getting a good job in these industries, but you're always going to have to stay learning because this is always going to evolve. If you don't learn anything other than what you have at the end of the time that you graduate, you will be obsolete.
Need not apply.
Yeah, you'll be obsolete quickly. So it's always been driven into my head that if I'm going to keep myself employable, marketable, that I will never be able to stop learning. I will never be able to stop acquiring new skills. And I just accepted that when I was young. I think so many other people, that they can't get that. They can't get it through their skull. It's like, no, man, I learned this. It should be worth what it was worth back then forever. And sorry, that's not the way that it works. There's a really great, well, you said it. There's a really great video on YouTube. I suggest everyone go watch it. It's called Humans Need Not Apply. And it talks about how technology will displace humans in the workforce. And not only will it already has. And it's crazy how technology happens around us and we don't notice it happening, right? So the greatest example I like to give, or the most one of the most familiar, is you walk in a grocery store, right? When I was a kid, you would walk into a grocery store, there would be 15 people working every register. I even think I've said this on one of these episodes before. Now you go, there's one person on a register, and there's one person manning a series of 10 machines that you walk up to and scan your stuff yourself. Why? Why is that? Because the person who's running the business saw that it costs less to have those machines doing the work that those humans were doing. And that ain't gonna stop at grocery stores.
I mean, there's an even bigger example, in my opinion. Name me someone under 40 years old that much prefers to go into their bank every week when they get a check.
I know.
Then go scan it on their phone or use the ATM. ATMs.
Well, and online banking in
right,
general.
Online banking.
You know, you can transfer. You rarely have to go in.
I hate going into the bank now. Why? Because all the banks are switching to a sales model. I can't get through one transaction with my teller without them saying, oh, do you know you've qualified? And I cut them off. I'm like, I'm not interested. I'm not here for you to sell me anything. I'm here to literally give you this to put it in my account.
Retail is a perfect example. Retail is getting destroyed right now by online shopping. It's crazy. We were watching the Thanksgiving Macy's parade day before yesterday. And they kept saying, you know, this is all possible because of the anchor store here, Macy's, right? They had it right on the world's biggest store. And I was thinking, that ain't the world's biggest store. You know, for us, it's Amazon.
Right.
You know, in China, it's Baidu or Alibaba.
Alibaba, yeah.
But it ain't Macy's anymore. And Sears is dying. Well, and JCPenney's struggling.
How long is it going to be the Macy's? It'll eventually be the Jeff Bezos parade, like in like 2 years.
Yeah, probably.
He just broke back into the $100 billion club.
And I think, you know, that touches on something, right? There is I'm sentimental about certain stuff.
Well, yeah.
And that is actually, there's this little bit of sadness. Like, man, Macy's it's going to be the Amazon Jeff Bezos parade. Like that's sad. Like my kids are gonna grow up in a world that is, I mean, it's drastically different.
Talk about the family video thing.
Okay.
Yeah, this is cool. Really shout out to you, Justin Jasinski.
Yeah, hey Justin.
And Phil L. Frank.
Yeah, that's right. So video stores. When Zach and I were little, I mean, it was a big part of our life because of your dad.
I was just gonna say. How did he rent movies?
He kept Blockbuster in business much longer than they should have been. I'll say that. He rented movies in alphabetical order.
Literally by the shelf.
You would go in his house and you'd see three movies starting, two with J and one with K. And be like, oh, you got to the K's, huh, Don? Awesome. But yeah, we would spend so much time going into Blockbuster.
It was
video.
An experience.
It was. There was something about it, you know, and they had the popcorn and the snacks there. And
you bumping into people from around town, other kids, you're running around. I mean, it was kind of like a arcade almost.
Yeah, but it was all, there was a community aspect to it that you don't have.
You go, like Seinfeld talks about, you go up to, what picks do you have, Robbie? Where's Robbie's picks?
I was going to bring their picks.
Yeah. Victor's
jeans or whatever.
Yeah, Gene and
Elaine falls in love with a guy because of his movie picks and she finds out he's 13.
He had her bring over vodka and fireworks.
Oh, that was awesome. Okay, so, but we're losing that. Like, it's so, the convenience of being at home and picking a movie, like, and no late fees, no Be Kind Rewind or you're going to get a fee. Like, I think about the negatives of that, and it's like, well, those are kind of game breakers. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we're talking about being able to push a button and see it on my TV instantly based on what I feel like today versus...
And them suggesting things that are similar to my other preferences.
Right. And you get a bummer movie, like you rent it and you paid for and you put it in, you get 10 minutes into it, and you're like, I hate it. But
I've gone through
all this effort. I have to watch it.
So all video stores are out of business, right?
But family video, it seems, you know, they are thriving. And It was on, it wasn't on CBS Sunday Morning. We watch CBS Sunday Morning every morning. I'll plug that show. Anybody want a good TV show that makes you feel happy? Go watch CBS Sunday Morning. But the national news before it did a special on family video and how they're bucking the trend of technology. Every other store related to retail or, you know, the video stores obviously all died. Blockbuster's gone. Family video is thriving. And they said it, the two things that stuck in my head of why. Number one, monetary decisions, which is whatever.
Smart business.
Yeah, smart business. They bought their stores rather than rented them.
So they're in the real estate game like McDonald's.
Right, right. So that's really helped them out. But the second thing, and I think this is what really matters, is human connection, is that sense of community that we were talking about. They said that they interviewed some store managers, and they said, yeah, we probably know more than 50% of the people that walk in our door. And Justin, we know them by name.
For sure.
Yeah. And we say hi to them, and we talk to them, ask them how they're doing.
And they know their product. They watch all the people that work there like movies. They love movies. They watch them, and they can talk about them in depth.
And they basically said because of those two reasons, they're bucking the trend, and they are thriving.
Yeah.
And you can see there are, like, resurgences of old technologies, right? They come back. It's almost like a novelty.
What's that show you tried to get me to watch? I watched the first season. It's pretty good.
Stranger Things?
No. Western World?
Westworld.
Westworld. It makes me think of that outside of all the violent stuff you can do. But, you know, it's like the old-timey photo booth that you go in downtown St. Charles and you dress up like you're an old cowboy or whatnot or a bank robber and take a black and white photo. Why? Because we want to be connected to our past. Right. So I always view you and I guess critique you that you're always just looking to the future. And I asked you once and you never gave me an answer. I said, do you ever think about the past or history or any kind of connection? And I also asked you, what traditions do you have? And you never gave me answers to those two.
Oh, things. I absolutely.
Which I don't think you did nefariously. I just think you forgot.
Well, the answer to those is, yeah, I think about the past all the time. And yeah, I think about it sentimentally.
Nice.
And there are certain things that I experienced growing up that my kids never will. And I dislike that. But
they're going to experience stuff we, you know, when we were a kid, we would have probably really liked.
Exactly.
Augmented reality.
Oh, man, the things that they're going to get to experience. And again, we're talking about enable versus constrain here. I look at the enable, and I just think that they're going to get to do cool, amazing things. They're going to have better life. You know, they're going to, the challenges that they face in their life, they will have tools that help them through them in a better way than we had. I mean, let's talk about the biggest challenge in my life and what would happen to my kids if they had to go through it, right? I had cancer when I was 17 and when I was 19. You know what they did? They pumped poison into my veins that killed all of my cells in my body.
And if they don't do it correctly, you're literally just
they have to overfilling
you with poison.
They just calculate how, you weigh this much? Oh, you can probably withstand this much poison. We'll pump that in you, you know? And they call it chemotherapy. It's therapy, right?
Well, and then radiation.
Well, it's a special poison, right?
Radiation.
It kills.
We're going to kill this tumor with radiation. Right. But if we do it too much, it'll create more tumors.
You have to sign a thing and they tell you. You have a greater chance of developing cancer later in life because of these treatments. Also, you have a greater chance of organ failure. You have a greater chance of other diseases happening. You have a greater chance, like my thyroid's gone, you know, like I've got health problems. My immune system's messed up, but I'm alive. You know, I talk to doctors. They're like, look at it. Yeah. Look at your life right now. Do you like it? Yeah. Okay. Well, you wouldn't have been alive. So that's the trade-off.
So when you talked earlier about why you think you're so optimistic, I didn't want to derail your thought. This is my interpretation. At the conscious level, you talked about your training, your education, and the career you chose, and all of that makes sense. I think at an unconscious level, it's the tools that literally kept you alive when you were young that you're like, technology saved. I'm alive now because of technology. And I think that's just so taken for granted and embedded even with you. You don't think about it.
It's kind of crazy. We talk about purpose and identity, right? I was thinking, it seems morbid, everyone who's listening, but it's not, okay? Like, at this point in my life, way past it, but to discuss these things, I just have to say what was going on in the moment. So please, this is not don't need a pity party, this is not morbid stuff, but when I was 17 or 19, we're talking about purpose, we're talking about identity, right? If you're 17 years old and it's like, you have a potentially terminal illness, right? And you ask the doctor, well, what's my chance of living? And he says, I don't want to give you percentages because what if you're on the wrong side, right? I never say any percentages because it doesn't matter how high your chance is.
Yeah. Defensive medicine, the 101. Yeah.
So that hits you like hard, right? And you're like, well, what was I here for? Right? I'm 17 years old. I don't get to do anything. You know, like I've had fun. I've made connections. I've had friends, but I haven't changed the world. I haven't met, I haven't fulfilled my purpose yet. I'm not ready for this. And I'm not sure you're ever ready for it, but at 17, that's a hard thing to grapple with. Right? And so then you have to just get used to the fact that, okay, well, maybe that my purpose did happen. Maybe I had to find it already. I don't know. Maybe that jarring experience helped me develop. Maybe you're right. Maybe that helped me develop this whole thing where it's like, my purpose, I'm ready. If a piece of technology comes around and takes away what I thought was my purpose, like, I don't know. I'm ready for a new purpose. You know what I mean? Like, you got to get used to change. If there's anything that's going to happen in life, it's change, man. And if you're going to have a hard time, if you're going to hold on to the past, if you're going to have a hard time changing and facing the next day, I mean, it goes back to the Viktor Frankl quote, right? We think of these things as like clearly negative things that happen to your life that you have to deal with. The Viktor Frankl quote being, there's a space between stimulus and response where you get to choose your reaction. And in that space lies your freedom and your ability to grow. So the stimulus is always, the ones that are used for that quote are like, he was in a Nazi concentration camp. Well, clearly that's negative, right? That's a bad stimulus. Or losing a child, that's a bad stimulus. And you get to choose how you respond to these awful, awful stimuluses. But what if you're a truck driver and that's your living, and you know, and Tesla rolls out a self-driving semi like they just did, and Walmart bought 100 of them or something. And J.B. Hunt bought 100 of them or something. What if that happens? And all of a sudden you get laid off because you were a truck driver for Walmart, and that was your purpose and that was your identity, right? Well, now there's that stimulus. What's your response going to be? If you're going to hang on to the past and be negative and be bitter about it and just woe is me, I'm sorry, man. It's going to be a rough life.
I agree. And I 100% agree. But if we aggregate that times millions of people, that's not good for our country. That's not good for the economy. Just not good for the spirit of the U.S., the psyche of the U.S.
Yeah, we talked about this on the money episode.
Right, we could get into talked about universal this on the money basic episode. Income.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You were going
to
say something.
The money episode is like, we start off as debt slaves. We have to earn our way to eating. We have a cost of living. And so we have to have a purpose that contributes to the capitalist machine, or else we don't eat. And technology is eating into that. It's eating into that in grocery stores. It's eating into that in, you know, the transportation industry.
Retail.
Everything.
Every industry.
Everywhere that, you see jobs. Wait. And you're not safe. No one's safe. Go watch Humans Need Not Apply. You're a doctor. You think that you're safe? Right. They've got these analytical machines that know interactions between every drug. They know symptoms better than you know.
Doctors they're not only not safe, they are... Any business 101, get rid of the job that costs the most.
Yes,
number 9 out of the top 10 highest paid professions, at least in the state of Missouri, are all different types of physicians.
Yeah. Technology's coming.
I just read an article yesterday about physician burnout right now. Oh my God, the insurance companies and the hospital administrators are freaking out because of the number of errors that are occurring, the burnout, the suicides are up. It's not good. These people are getting, they're spending, here's something crazy, to simply log in the system for a flu shot for a patient. A doctor had her assistant track this. It took 32 clicks. 32 clicks for one patient just to go through the paperwork and reports. Doctors are spending roughly 2 times the amount of paperwork and administrata on a patient than they are with patients. And it is burning them out majorly.
Wow.
And
that's a problem.
Oh, my goodness. So my point is, doctors, as soon as that stuff can be more automated, machine learning, that's a no-brainer business decision.
I mean, they're gunning for them now. IBM Watson's a good example of one thing.
But you said every industry is... technology's hitting it, and I agree, except one big one, and it's the biggest employer in the United States, the government. Oh. I looked up which sectors of our economy do not adopt technology. All 10 of them were federal government departments, and number 1 was Department of Defense. NASA was like number 4.
Well, it's perfect, right? Because if we're talking about, if you link fear of change to power, right? So the people in power don't want change because they got power now.
And the most utmost power is the federal government of the United States.
Exactly. And so every piece of change, it's a threat, right? You look at oil companies are a great example, or, you know, I don't know, just go down the line. Anybody who's got power, they don't want the next technology, and they'll do anything they can to prevent it from happening.
This article was saying that some departments in the federal government still use floppy disks for data storage.
Well, it's proven, Zach. It's a proven, you know, what might happen if we use some other storage technology? I don't even want to think about it. I'm not going on to the next.
Okay, let's be random.
I'll die because I want to take the penicillin.
We've had a pretty good narrative here, so let's get a bit random and go totally off the map, if you will.
I love it.
Let's change it up. Let's switch it up. Maps and GPS, enabling constraining. People thought that maps, physical maps, would never go away. There's articles about that we have to have maps. Maps are, it's how we get around. It's how we traverse our terrain on the earth. Yeah, gone. Okay? Think about this. When is the last time you had your little navigation pulled up, Google Maps, or you're built into your car, and it takes you the wrong way? Even though you get somewhere and you actually know where you're at, and in your head you're like, no, I should actually be going left here, and it forces you to go right, and it adds time. But you rely on the technology. You put your trust in the technology, and it's wrong, rather than trust in your own instinct, knowledge, and past experience. It's happened to all of us,
yeah.
Right? And I'm not saying throw out the technology. That's not my point. My point is, with these tools, that's supposed to be a tool to help us, we have put so much faith and trust in them that we deny our own instincts and firsthand experience when we're going through it. We're like, well, it's not what the map's telling me to do. That's weird.
Well, I think you can apply that to every piece of technology, right? So tools. So I'm not a handy guy, right? But having the right tool for the job is always an important thing, or having the correctly designed tool. And, you know, there are perfect examples where you go to do a job, you look up the tools that you're supposed to need, you bring those tools, and there's something that's just not right about that tool. It doesn't fit the job. And like, man, this doesn't seem to be doing it right. You know what I mean? Like, something in my intuition tells me there's something better out there than whatever it is that I'm using. I do a little bit more research and find out, oh, I'm using the wrong kind of that tool or whatever, right? Maps. You can't tell me there wasn't a misprinted map
at some point
or an outdated map that somebody was using and it took them in the wrong direction. Every technology is that way, right? So we use it. We put our trust in it to enable us to do something. Through the experience of using it, our intuition sometimes is like, I don't know, this doesn't seem to be doing what it was, you know, what the purpose of it was supposed to be. I mean, that's just a natural part.
To me, any technology, if it starts causing me more constraints than enablements, I quit using it.
Well, give me an example.
The TV. So every now and then, we have one TV in our house. I take it downstairs and we just go no TV for a month. I haven't had actual cable. Most people haven't had that, I think, for a long time. But I got rid of that almost 10 years ago now. You know, to me, it's just something we don't need.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, what is one of the first things when we get around people to socialize, to talk about, and you get past your kids and the weather and this and that, even close friends, what shows are you watching? God, the entertainment industry has just infiltrated our fucking minds to the point where it's one of the top five questions we talk. What shows are you into right now? What are you watching? What's new out there? What should I watch? These original shows.
Well, if
you can't talk about that, there's a huge lack of connection.
I also hear a lot of people asking what you're reading, especially on the podcasts that I listen to. They say, what are the top books? I think that goes back to the power of stories, which we need to do an episode on that.
Also the power of who you're surrounding yourself with, right? Podcasts, even though they're very popular, they're still like less than 2% of the world population listens to podcasts.
Certainly.
They tend to be correlated with high intelligence, education.
Yeah, no
readers.
Doubt. No doubt. But that being said, it goes to, those are stories. Like everyone's consuming stories.
So here's a technology.
It's just new ways of getting those stories.
Create out. For someone like me, if this existed, I would subscribe. Here's a tool that someone can create in a business idea. The Cliff's Notes version of TV shows. You come on and you summarize all the popular points and plots of TV shows for the most popular ones in 1 minute segments for the top 30 popular shows, and you sell that as a subscription service so that a guy like me, I'd watch that as a workaround so that when I'm talking with people, oh, yeah, 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 and I can make my talking points and still have my connection with my friends.
That's a good idea.
And then in the business world, you can use that, you know, whatever, to build rapport, blah, blah, blah.
That's actually a damn good idea.
It's a great idea.
You just gave that out on the podcast.
I gave it out. Just give me a shout out when you become a billionaire from it.
No, that's a really great idea because it's like if you watch the full thing, you get the quote-unquote dramatic experience, right? You experience the suspense, the rising action, the conflict, the resolution. You get it all. But sometimes you just want to be able to talk to your friends about it. And you're like, I don't really want to watch all, you know, eight seasons of whatever show that was. Like,
right.
If I never started The Sopranos, right? Or if I never started The Wire or whatever, like everyone, I haven't watched those two shows. And it's like, I know they're awesome. I know they're great. I'm not going to go back and spend
a lot of time.
All of that time to watch them.
So you could watch my summary show.
Yeah, could watch the summary and I could have
that connection. Like, because I'm not handy, I like the idea of all these HD TV, let's redo the backyard or redo our house. I've never sat through one of those shows because it's ridiculous to me. Here's what it looked like before. Here's what it looked like after. That's it.
Yeah.
Give me a show like that where it's just the before and after photo. Move on.
Yeah. Well, no, that's.
Anyway, we're getting off track. What else do you want to mention? We're getting to an hour. We're going to break this one up into two different segments because we have so much to talk about.
Well, in the next segment, I want to talk about specific new on the horizon technologies, quote unquote. What did I call them? I called them.
Game changers?
Yeah, game changers, but they're also, I don't know. The word's escaping me right now. They're basically, they're argument starters. They are...
They're taboo.
It's crazy how a new technology that isn't part of our day-to-day is highly questioned. It's a argument starter. It's, you know, that's why I like to have these conversations at dinner. I love, you know, really getting into the back and forth with people about things and... I don't know. I guess that's another thing about my personality. Some people don't like that, but I enjoy that because I think it's real conversation versus just how's your day?
Small talk. Phatic talk. You skip right to medium talk.
Right. So I'd like to talk about some of the technologies that could be, if they come to fruition, they could change our life in the way that, like, what's the biggest, there are two things, and maybe I'm missing others, but I can think of two things that have really changed our lives since we were born. The biggest ones that I would say number one is the internet.
Agreed.
Number two is probably smartphones.
Agreed.
Okay.
And again, not always for the
positive, but
just in general.
Not for the better.
Those have changed.
But, you know, if you go back, imagine what the internet was when it first started, right? It was in its infancy. We're talking about, and when I'm when I say when it first started, I mean when it first started hitting the average American home. And then it was the early to mid 90s.
With the dial-up modem.
With the beep.
Which I have up there.
Like, I remember.
You've got mail.
Yeah, you've got, well, my mom would pick up the phone, and I would drop the internet. I'd be like, Mom, I'm on the internet! She'd just start trying to call my grandma, make me bad. Hilarious.
Another thing, so we'll talk about future technologies and how they'll change our paradigms, really. I also want to talk about marketing of technologies and capitalism and its contradictions and how technologies exploit some of those.
Oh, yeah.
And then I also want to talk about platforms. So not just a new technology, but a platform that gives people opportunities to create other types of technologies. And
the whole standing on your shoulders.
Exactly. And lowers barriers to entry in different markets. So I'm thinking of places like an Etsy, a Kickstarter, crowdfunding, equity funding, 3D printing. Yeah, those are technologies in and of themselves, but they're leading to other collisions of new technologies and ideas that could create whole new industries.
Yeah, and I'd like to, on that note, the whole standing on the shoulders of those that come before us, I'd like to relate a joke that Joe Rogan did in his stand-up comedian show. That was pretty funny.
Okay.
He said that he basically goes into how everyone thinks they're so smart because they can use these pieces of technology so well, right? Like, oh, I'm so good at using this computer. Or
I can code in Archer.
Yeah, this phone. I'm like, I'm a power user. Or, yeah, I can code or whatever. And he's like, yeah, they are smart. He's like, but you know who's really smart? The people who came up with that shit, the people who like actually came up with the basis of all of those things, the ones who came up with all the foundational things, the electricity, the circuitry, right. the science, the math, the principles of how it works, the physics of it, of semiconductors.
Conducting electricity.
And he's like, whenever those people are telling me how smart they are, I think the best comeback is, oh yeah? So if I drop you off in the woods, how long till you send me an email?
It's well taken.
Yeah. Yeah. Because literally, you're standing on the shoulders of everyone who came before you. You think you're smart? Yeah.
So the thing with technology is it comes down, it's trying to be innovative, trying to create new things, ideas, ways of living, better, faster, stronger. But it's three bubbles. And when those Venn diagram bubbles overlap, then the new technology will not only emerge, but emerge on a grand scale. And the bubbles are, is it desirable, right? Can we market it? Can we sell it? Will people want it and like it? Two is it feasible? That's literally any technologist or futurist, they don't have no in their vocabulary. It's always yes. Yes, it's possible. We can do it. We'll figure out a way to do it if we can't do it now. The last one is the one that holds everything back, which goes back to money. Is it viable? How can we make it efficiently, affordably? Economical. How do we distribute it? What are the logistics and the supply chain management from sourcing our materials to distribution to the mass? It's funny, but it's true.
Yeah.
The viability, the business aspect of technology, there's a lot of things that currently exist that only elite wealthy people could have if the inventors would allow them to have them. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you know what? That's a really great – let's talk about that a lot in the next episode. I want to put this in the notes. We're going to have to do this. There are some things right now that everyone has in their daily life. They accept it and they use it that haven't really been proven to be viable. Twitter is one of those. Twitter has never made money.
Tons of technology
loses
companies.
Money. Uber has never made money, has only lost money. Tesla has never made money, has only lost money. Like these things, and it's like, oh, well, then how do they still exist? It's like the only way that those things would have existed in the past was if the federal government subsidized them.
Right.
Private subsidization.
Yeah, they're betting on the
growth.
Yes,
these investors, and you know, they're constantly doing rounds of funding to get money for it. It's insane. We'll talk about that. Yeah. That's a really great one.
And there's been some really good articles written about other tech entrepreneurs. They're like, people are idiots. Yeah. They're putting their money on these companies that have never returned a dollar.
I know.
One guy specifically, he's got $100 million company, and no one knows who he is. And he's like, these guys are jokes, man. He's like, all we do is print cash for our investors.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll be a really good one. I'd also like to talk about controversy. So that's the word I was missing. New technologies that are on the horizon, they're controversial, right? So I can make a statement. How about this statement? Nobody seems to fathom that this could be true. In the future, when automated driving cars, self-driving cars, are commonplace, the average American family will not own a car. And instead, they will subscribe to a car sharing plan in the way that you do a cell phone. And they will have, you know, different packages for like what kind of car picks you up, how many miles you get taken per month, you know, stuff like that. There'll be an unlimited package. You can get the luxury car package, et cetera. And because of the fact that owning a car is the second biggest expense for the average American family right now, and the average car is parked more than 95% of its time, it will economically make sense. People right now can't get rid of the idea that they're not going to have a car parked in their garage. And when I bring this up at dinner or wherever, the negative reactions just come spewing out. I'll never do that. I always want a car. I want my own freedom. It's like this car gives them freedom.
It gives
them
a purpose, identity. Purpose,
yeah. But ultimately what's going to erode that over time, and it's going to take time, but it'll erode over time when they see their peers getting rid of their cars and doing it, and when they see
their bank accounts,
the bank account and improve. The actual monetary difference that it makes, and therefore it's that inevitable steamroller. Let's talk about technology controversies becoming accepted, you know, parts of daily life.
So the incremental progression of technology and how that happens.
Yeah, but and like let's do it from a looking backwards perspective. If I were to tell you that everyone was going to use the internet every day. And just about every hour of every day. If I went back to 1994 and 1995 and said that it would be integrated into our lives, that we wouldn't be able to work our jobs or go to school without it, that would have been a really controversial statement. You would get laughed out of most
dinners. Work your job without it? No. I can. I can work all my different jobs without it. I don't need it.
I can't.
That's, I know, that's interesting. I literally don't need it.
Let's okay.
Email.
Let's do a chain challenge. Don't use your email for a week. Yeah, no, let's see how that goes.
Yeah.
So, okay, anyway, email. True. Yeah. You can't. So,
that would I could.
Yeah.
And unless I have, if I didn't have tenure, then I wouldn't be around anymore.
You would, you would.
But there are some professors who don't use email or Blackboard or anything, and all the students hate it. They're all philosophy professors.
Yeah. And only in academia, man.
Yeah.
They would have been fired everywhere else. So, that would have been a really controversial statement in 1995. Today, it's just, well, yeah, of course you have to have the internet to work or go to school or do anything in life. So in the same way, we can think of some statements that we can make today that would be controversial that I believe in 20 years, it's going to be like, well, yeah, of course that's the case, you know. And then we'll see if they come to fruition. That's the thing that'll be cool. We'll listen to this in 10 or 20 years. And maybe something that I'll say was like completely wrong, like the flying car prediction, right? Everyone was sure we were going to have flying cars by now.
Yeah. Well, here's a controversial statement. John Arrow, who people call the next Elon Musk, he's 30 years old. He's a technology entrepreneur. He's a futurist. He's one of these people that gets invited. I can't remember the name of this cruise, but there is an organization that invites what they believe to be the top 500 most intelligent and future forward thinking people. And they just go on this cruise ship for a month and talk about how they're going to basically change the world with technology. His name's John Arrow, and the statement that he made, and he's being 100% serious, is he believes he'll be immortal. He said, I'm going to work every day my whole life to ensure that I can transfuse my consciousness into a machine, and I think I'll be able to do that with the way AI, automation, and machine learning are integrating. This man believes, and he's not some weirdo wacko. This, you know, he's got multiple businesses. He's a pretty regular dude. He's like, no, I'm going to be immortal. My consciousness will live forever.
You want to talk about a controversial statement? There's one for you.
Yeah. Go watch the movie Her with Joaquin Phoenix in it and Scarlett Johansson, and it kind of touches on some of this.
It's so funny because, and let's talk about this next episode. For some reason, when you're younger, you have more faith in technology. John Arrow's younger than you and I. He's not much younger.
And he doesn't have kids.
And I guess, and kids, too, have an impact on that. You talk to older folks about that. It's so funny you brought that up because at Thanksgiving, my dad and my father-in-law, I overhear them and I'm like, I'm not even getting into that. I heard them saying, yeah, the thing about artificial intelligence is it'll never be truly conscious like we are, because it's machine based, and for you to have consciousness you have to be life nature based, and that's what creates consciousness. And I'm just like, that's a hypothesis. It's untestable, unprovable. We have no idea what consciousness is. When you talk about technology versus consciousness, I mean, it's one of the...
So it's a smart argument.
It's all philosophy.
It's a smart argument to protect their meaning, right, their purpose, right, their impact.
Because it, from a religious perspective, from a life purpose perspective, if that were not true, they would be in crisis mode, right? Oh my God. If a machine could have the equal consciousness to me, and we created that machine... Right? Not God or whatever. Like, then does that challenge everything that I've ever believed my whole life? And what does that mean about me and who created me? Like, they can't wrap their head. The older you get, the harder it is to be able to be fluid in all of those things and accept change on what you've believed your whole life.
Good.
Anyway, awesome. This is an awesome.
Give some people some change challenges. Do you have any that you think of? Or?
Yep. Yeah. Go ahead. Man, I think we've done this one before, but
well,
it really
is. If it's
here.
Good, we should have to do it all the time. It's like sweeping, Dave. It's an old Buddhist idea. When the floor is dirty, you sweep. You don't just sweep once.
One day, no phone.
Computer. Mine was screenless challenge. Go 2 hours without it. And if you can, ratchet it up to 1 day. But start somewhere.
Yeah.
To where it's a challenge for you.
That's true. I like the idea of just committing, going all in, being like, on this day, I will not use technology. And it's crazy to think about what that would be like. You're actually going to have to prepare for it. You're going to have to set your autoresponders. You're going to have to set your whatever. You have to tell people, hey, you call me on this day, I ain't answering.
Yeah, but that's another cool way to start a conversation about the principle behind what you're doing. That's even cooler to say, today is my no screen day.
That is
I'll
good.
Get back at you tomorrow. We can talk about it if you want.
You
want
to get a hold of me?
Yeah.
Come to my
put
house.
It out on Facebook. Put it out on Twitter. Put it out wherever. So it ties into mine is revisit your original survival tool, conversations. So maybe even on that screen day, if you can do no screen, whatever, if you can only do an hour, fine, or 24 hours, replace some interesting conversations with that screen. Be in the moment with somebody. My second one's a little more, not complex, but a little more work. But create what I call your own technology matrix or technology model. Just draw out a little chart and have four different categories, and you can organize the format however you want. Have one row or column be needs. Have one row or column be wants or your desires. Have one row or column be problems solved. Have one row or column be problems created. And then list the different technologies that you use on a daily basis. And you can probably, if you fill it out honestly and accurately, you could probably do some decluttering and minimizing and minimalization of things that just maybe are causing more constraining and problems for you. And it could free you up to better use some of the other tools or have better conversations and connections with other people in your life.
I agree with that. And how about this? How about, so that would be how to better limit your use of technology.
It's analyzing your current use of technology.
It's actually, it would be how to optimize your use of technology. I'll say this. How about something to help build your appreciation of technology? Pick something pick an activity that you're using a technology to help you facilitate, and purposely do not use the latest technology for it. So, like, just some thoughts off the top of my head. And the period of time is going to change based on the technology that you're using, but maybe try to use all cash for a week or a month, and don't use any computer or automated banking or ATM. Try to mow your lawn. Find one of those old lawnmowers that doesn't have a motor on it. That's just as a push scissor thing. Try to mow your lawn with that. Or if you're cooking, you don't use any electrical tools. You know, whip everything by hand and chop everything by hand. Do something where you're purposely omitting the use of technology so that you see what it was like just before that technology was created. And you understand, okay, so this technology, I think at its core, what we think of it is a better way of doing things, right?
Yep, great. So hopefully you enjoyed the journey and conversation today. And as we always say at Life Lab, experiment with life.
We'll see you next time.